The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
This is our legal expert, Jeff O'Brien. He's a well-recognized attorney from Lohmann Abdo in such areas as business law, commercial contract disputes, intellectual property, and more. He also knows his sports and can lend his expertise when there are legal issues at play. This is Dave Harrigan, a well-recognized producer and update host from the Mackey and Judd Show. He's not really an expert in anything, but here he is to introduce the topics to Jeff and then nod in agreement every time Mr. O'Brien makes a great point. Welcome to Case in Point with Jeff O'Brien. Here's Dave Harrigan.
All right, it is time for another episode of the Case in Point podcast. We'll mention right off the top, if you're not already, make sure you find us and check us out on Facebook, too, facebook.com, Case in Point. We are on there each and every time we put a show together, talking about the things we do, so you can follow all that's happening with the Case in Point podcast. Jeff, today, a subject we've discussed before, the Gophers, the U of M, and there's trouble brewing.
Yep.
There's scandal, there's controversy, the law is getting involved. This time it's not Xanax. We're talking about the football team and sexual assault allegations. Obviously very very serious. Let's go back in time a little bit to when this all began. Not frankly too long ago, just the beginning of September. Kind of take us through the timeline and to where we are now.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. You know, it's unfortunate when you say, "Hey, did you hear about the scandal over at the U?" You have to say, "Could you be more specific, please?"
No kidding.
But yeah, this one concerns the football team. What happened was there was an allegation that there was some players involved with an alleged sexual assault on September 2nd of this year. And the Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman came out and determined that there was, and this is the words I've seen, is insufficient admissible evidence to charge any of the players.
Now, layman's term, that just means they couldn't find enough.
They didn't have enough.
I mean, what is,
as he said, admissible
evidence? Does that make a distinction?
Yeah, you know, there's rules of evidence, a little bit beyond the scope of our podcast today, but there are rules of evidence in a courtroom, and certain things are admissible and certain things are not. So I don't know any more of the details other than all he said was there was insufficient admissible evidence to charge any of them. So that doesn't mean that they were innocent. That doesn't mean that they were guilty, just that there was not sufficient evidence to go forward with the case. Now, this is the unique part about it, Dave, is that the alleged victim works at TCF Bank Stadium.
That's different.
That is key to this whole saga.
Yeah.
Is that she filed for restraining orders against, it ultimately was six Gopher football players, Keontae Harden, Ray Buford, Dior Johnson, Tamarian Johnson, Carlton Jam, and Keandre Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And the restraining orders kept them a certain distance away from her at her apartment and at her place of employment, which happens to be where these six players happen to play their home football games for the U.
Yes, it does.
And this all came to a head last weekend with the Rutgers game, and these six players were not allowed to be at the stadium for the game. Since then, the order has been dismissed. The victim, alleged victim, rescinded the order against Keandre Thomas on Monday. So if nothing else happens before the Purdue game, and we know that something is going to happen, but if nothing else did happen, he's able to be there on November 3rd. And there was a hearing scheduled originally Tuesday. The judge said that there was a mandatory 5-day waiting period that hadn't passed, and so they pushed the decision down the road, and others, there's a decision expected on whether or not the orders will stay in place or be modified prior to the Purdue game it's actually November 5th. So we're going to talk a little bit today about what these harassment restraining orders are and what are the grounds to obtain one of them. And how this whole process works. So in terms of getting one, it's a very, as we talked about on the show with Judd and Phil yesterday, or Tuesday, this is a very powerful tool because you can go in what we call ex parte, meaning without notice to the opposing party in front of a judge. And if the facts warrant, you can obtain this order without having notice to the other side. And then the hearing comes later, whether it's whether or not it stays in place. And then, we'll talk about why, a little bit here, the big question is, why were these orders issued against the six players when they weren't charged with any crime? So let's talk a little bit about the law. And I've had to deal with these in my practice and actually personally. So I've, a lot of these times it comes up, I've had a context of a former employer, an employer terminating an employee and turning around and filing one of these orders against the former employee and us having to deal with trying to get it lifted. I've had it numerous times dealing with neighbor issues.
In your personal life?
In my personal life, too. Yeah, in my practice I have, but in my personal life I have a next door neighbor that I used to be on our homeowners association board, and he is a Anoka County sheriff's deputy. Apparently, didn't like when rules were enforced against him, and decided that rather than having a civilized discussion with the board or anyone involved, decided to just do things and harass the wife of a board member, namely my wife.
Wow.
And actually, one point caught him. My wife called me. She said, "I caught him peeping in our basement windows one day."
Oh, that's creepy.
And when you got someone in a profession where they're allowed to carry a firearm and take it home with them, we ultimately decided for various reasons not to go forward with it. But I've had to. It's a scary situation when you're looking at having to file this type of order for protection.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about. There is a statute on it, and it's a Minnesota statute, section 609.748, subdivision 2. And it says, a person who is a victim of harassment may seek a restraining order from the district court in the manner provided in this section. The parent, guardian, or step-parent of a minor who is a victim of harassment may seek a restraining order from the district court on behalf of the minor. An application for relief under this section may be filed in the county of residence of either party or in the county in which the alleged harassment occurred. There are no residency requirements that apply to a petition for harassment restraining order. Now, these orders, Dave, are within most cases granted. And part of the reason is you have to swear out a set of facts as to why you qualify, why you would have the grounds for having an order. And we'll go through the definition of harassment in just a second. And, no judge wants to be the one with the TV news cameras and the reporter on their front doorstep or outside their chambers asking them why they didn't grant an order of protection or a restraining order against somebody who later causes harm to the person that was
applying. Sure. Yeah, it makes order. Sense.
So there, if they err on any side, it's definitely on the side of granting the order. And and part of it depends on the judge on duty that's listening to the applications. And if it's a judge that may personally be more readily to grant them, or maybe offers applies a greater degree of scrutiny, it just sometimes depends on the individual judge that you draw in the situation. It's no different than in a business dispute where you're obtaining injunctive relief, mm-hmm. temporary injunctive relief, and sometimes you file a big set of stack of motion papers. 3 o'clock on a Thursday or Friday, judge may be more inclined to grant that rather than sit there till all hours, and especially during golf season, then come back later and actually hear, because you can always go back and hear these, whether or not to keep these orders or these injunctions in place later.
Well, first the word harassment is in there in that statute several times. How wide is that definition? What does that include? Because it seems like it could be extremely broad.
It's pretty broad. Here's what the statute says. This is subdivision 1A of that same statute, 609.748. It says harassment includes, number one, a single incident of physical or sexual assault, a single incident of stalking, and that's referenced in another statute, a single incident of non-consensual dissemination of private sexual images under section and another section,
mm-hmm.
or repeated incidents of intrusive or unwanted acts, words, or gestures that have a substantial adverse effect or are intended to have a substantial adverse effect on the safety, security, or privacy of another, regardless of the relationship between the actor and the intended target. Now, there's some other definitions. It's targeted residential picketing. So you're dealing with, you know, picketing like labor issues. A pattern of attending public events after being notified that the actor's presence at the event is harassing another.
We're talking about a lot of violent or creepy behavior,
basically. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then in terms of who an order can be obtained against, they define what a respondent is. It says any adults or juveniles alleged to have engaged in harassment or organizations alleged to have sponsored or promoted harassment. And so what happens here, Dave, is, you know, the orders were obtained. The players were given notice that the orders were obtained and were told that that meant that they could not be at the stadium.
And let's quick go back. So the employee here who filed for the restraining order, she can go to the judge and say, hey, I have, I believe I have just cause for a restraining order. Do the players, do they have to be notified at this time yet?
It would be, this is what we get back to, that this whole ex parte proceeding, that the person, the petitioner can appear before the judge initially without notice to the other side. And the judge makes a decision whether to issue the order, dismiss the case, or say, we'll schedule a hearing and then decide if the order should be issued. So the judge has the discretion to issue the order without giving notice or to schedule a hearing, and then the party that's the respondent in the case is given a copy of the petition, and then at a later date, the hearing is held as to whether or not the order should be issued, and both sides are present in that case to argue their position. Now, if it's issued without notice to the other side, then I should say these orders stay in effect if issued for 2 years.
Okay.
And so if the respondent has a right to request a hearing to argue against the order, and if it's been already issued, they have 20 days from the service of the petition or 45 days of the date of the order to request a hearing. And then at that point, the other side then gets to make their argument, and the judge decides if there's facts there to support a restraining order or whether or not they're going to dismiss the petition.
So if you were to file an order against me for something you didn't like, maybe you didn't like the way I was hosting the show today, the first I could hear about it would be after a temporary order has already been filed.
Correct.
And at that point, then I can have my time in front of the judge to explain why I think it's bunk and why I was really fantastic on the show today, and that order is complete garbage, and then the judge gets to decide who he wants to side with,
basically. That's right. And my understanding of what's going on right now is that, because there was a hearing scheduled for Tuesday. It was postponed. It's going to be the hearing is going to be held prior to some point before the next home game against Purdue. And part of what the player's attorney is trying to do is to show that fine, apartment's one thing.
Yep.
In terms of the stadium, that there are adequate safety measures in place to make sure that this is not going to be an issue at the stadium. Now, I don't know. I haven't seen the petition. I don't know what the grounds were, if it was just that there was this alleged sexual assault and that was what it was based upon, or if there was some continued harassment or allegations of harassment beyond this one incident. I had read somewhere that there may have been video recording of whatever transpired.
Okay.
I don't know. But for whatever reason, the woman was able to obtain the order without a hearing, and now what's the next step is the seeking to modify the order so that the players are allowed to be in the stadium even with this person as an employee being there as well. And my understanding is Mark Coyle, the athletic director, is going to come forward and with a discussion or evidence of what the university has in place in terms of safety and security procedures at home games, with the goal of having this order modified at least, and being able to let these guys play
on
Saturdays.
It seems like it would be a little different than, Yeah, I mean, the players obviously need to be at the stadium to play in the game, but it's different than if you have what I would think two people that happen to work in a professional setting in the same office building, mm-hmm. for instance. Mm-hmm. What, you know, ABC Electronics, whatever it is, if two people are actually paid to be there to do their professional job versus you have somebody who works at the stadium and two football players who aren't there obviously being paid to play football. They're just simply college football players. Is there a mm-hmm. difference in there that you think the judge would look at?
No, I don't think so. You know, it's interesting. Like I said, I've dealt with a lot of these coming up in terms of like neighbor disputes. And I've had two situations where one time the order was granted, it had been already been granted against my client. We were seeking to have it dismissed and ultimately were able to resolve the matter. And that what happens a lot of times is they'll say you can't be within X number of feet of the petitioner.
Yeah.
Okay. In say like a single family home or neighborhood, that's pretty easy to care. I mean, you're gonna. I think the judge is gonna skew to the side of granting that order. Okay. Mm. The one time where I ever applied that I did not get it, it was a condominium. Was the next door neighbor
okay.
that was banging on the walls and causing problems and causing a lot of emotional distress to my client. In that case, they wouldn't give the order because to give any sort of a radius away from my client would have essentially required the neighbor to move. And I was kind of like, yeah, what's your point?
Mm-hmm.
Harassment is harassment. And they said that was too harsh of a result. There was too much prejudice to that. And so that was one where they said we'll have a hearing on it.
Okay.
They didn't necessarily dismiss it. They scheduled a hearing and you know, we addressed it in the interim some other things. So, I don't think it necessarily matters that it just happens to be, the football players. I think if anything, a judge may even be more sensitive to that they're not trying to grant special treatment to someone who plays football for the University of Minnesota versus another typical employee-employer mm-hmm. situation. So it's bizarre. It's a bizarre situation. You don't always – this is a very unique set of facts where you have this where the person is employed at the stadium. And as I mentioned on the show on Tuesday, this is not something where the university can just say, fine, you want to do this, you're fired. Well, you can't retaliate against somebody – for exercising their rights and trying to protect themselves by filing a harassment restraining order against somebody. So, so that's not an option. So that's why I think I read somewhere too that there was discussions with the petition, with the woman after these orders were entered about modifying it. And supposedly, I don't know if it was her or her legal team, that offered to modify it, but only in regards to her apartment, which is a little bit bizarre because I would think that you'd want more security in terms of the apartment. And so then it kind of looks as, well, what's the point of this? If you're just simply trying to keep them from playing, is this another, mm-hmm. is this another way of punishing them because there wasn't this insufficient admissible evidence to charge them? What's going on? Now we find out that it was rescinded against one of them. Well, so there's still five in place. So it's an unfortunate situation. It's bizarre. But you know, for the listeners, it's good to know what these orders are, because it could be a neighbor issue, could be a domestic, abuse issue, could be something else. There are grounds. There's a reason this statute exists. There's a reason that they have criteria that can be established to seek protection, because what happens is if someone, of course, violates the order, then there can be legal ramifications for that in terms of law enforcement picking the person up and taking them away in cuffs, versus having to deal with something more tragic by not even having an order like this in place. So that's the purpose behind them, the policy behind them. Is to give folks that are feeling threatened or harassed a legal means to be able to involve, because law enforcement is generally reactive, not proactive, right? Because you get into all sorts of other constitutional issues about, you're a bad dude. I'm going to keep my eye on you. Well, when you go in and can prove legally, no, this is a bad dude or a bad lady, and I'm entitled to protection. Well, now you've given law enforcement the very violation of the order gives law enforcement the right to act. And so that's why we have this whole thing. Anything with criminal law, you're always worrying about constitutional rights. And so, that's why this whole process is laid out in terms of, you know, with due process. Yes, there can be a need for an emergency issuance of this order, but at the end of the day, someone's going to get their day in court and be heard as to whether or not it should stay in place.
So let's spin it forward then to in this case specifically, the hearing that's likely going to be next week before the Purdue game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it could be any situation. Once you have that hearing, both sides before the judge, arguing whether or not a restraining order should be in place. Once that decision is made, is there an appeal process that can be made by the side that doesn't get what they want? Or is it simply, it's just a restraining order. It's not like someone's going to prison or, you know, there's not, you know, huge legal ramifications, I guess. So is it just whatever the judge says, that goes? And
yeah,
that's
your hearing is your right to be heard, and the judge makes the decision, and the order is what it is. Now, sometimes, depending on what factual circumstances led to the order itself, there may be situations where the parties can negotiate about an alternative remedy, a lifting of the order, because, you know, for these players, you know, I'm not aware of any of them that are seemingly NFL draft prospects. So these guys are, you know, they're student athletes. They're going to go on to do something else in life after they're done playing football. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they find, you see that this thing is, they got a restraining order against them for 2 years, you know, that's going to affect their, you know, employment and other things. And, so these are not to be taken lightly. So very often depending on whatever the circumstances are, if I'm dealing with one, I want to try to get it resolved, and maybe voluntarily. And it's easier to do, like I said, on neighbor disputes, it's easier to work out than, sure, than something like this, where you have a possible sexual assault involved. But still, this can really mess somebody up if they've done something so egregious that a court feels the need to issue this order and keep it in place. It'd be tough for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, most important question, how are things with you and your neighbors now?
Don't talk to them.
Are we okay?
Don't talk to them. Don't talk to them.
You don't talk to that specific neighbor, but I mean, other neighbors, do you have other problems?
Don't get me started. I had
it might be you that's the problem, Jeff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting at.
Yeah, I know. No, it's unfortunate that, and this is, we're getting a little bit off topic, but, you know, if folks out there, as builders want to put more and more houses in neighborhoods closer and closer together, unfortunately, this stuff happens. And it's, rather than take matters into your own hands or use self-help, it's good to know that a remedy like this exists at law. It's a few hundred dollars to file the petition, the petition, mm-hmm, and you have a hearing. If it's in force, the county sheriff will enforce it. So it's unfortunate that sometimes this happens, but as folks are pushed closer and closer together like sardines and tempers flare, you know, the law prefers this type of remedy rather than fisticuffs or something worse.
Probably the best. That'll do it for another Case in Point. Thank you, Jeff. As always, a reminder, no matter what avenue you found us on this time, we've got Podcast One, we've got 1500ESPN.com, and of course, iTunes. Give us that iTunes rating. And, Jeff, the Facebook page.
The Facebook page, yep.
Gotta find Case in Point on the Facebook page as well. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.